are gathered, and the ox is through grinding, and the husk has been shattered. The wind rushes down up high on the hill, and the old chaff is scattered, the new seed lies still on the threshing floor. When Joseph went up with the body of Jacob, and waded the Jordan, and buried his bones, the Egyptians encamped at the field of Acacias, unable to enter, promise they moaned at the threshing floor. Moses returned to that field with the ark, and the children of Israel set to embark. He gave law and warning of future years that filled them with hope and ground them to tears at the threshing floor. When the reaping is done and the wheat sheaves are gathered, and the ox is through grinding, and the husk has been shattered, and the wind rushes down up high on the hill, the old chaff is scattered, and the new seed lies still on the threshing floor. The stars above Bethlehem mirrored the seed that was scattered and rich about Boaz's feet. When he was awakened, the beauty he found was Ruth, a young maiden that love had brought down to the threshing floor. God's judgment had ravaged the city of Zion, and 70,000 lay dead or dying. 3 days was enough to quench King David's pride, so the death angel lowered his sword in mid-stride at the threshing floor. When the reaping is done and the wheat sheaves are gathered, the ox is through grinding, the husk has been shattered, and the wind rushes down up high on the hill, and the old chaff is scattered, the new seed lies still on the threshing floor. But the ultimate harvest of all he had planned was 120 who had gathered together and felt the first rush of his winnowing fan on the threshing floor. Well, this is what Daniel the prophet had seen of the stone that was cut without hands in the dream. All that was left when the idol was smashed were the pieces of kingdoms blown off like the chaff on the threshing floor. And the reaping is done, and the wheat sheaves are gathered, and the ox is through grinding, and the husk has been shattered. The wind rushes down up high on the hill, the old chaff is scattered, and the new seed lies still on the threshing floor, on the threshing floor.
I knew that's what that verse was.
Yeah. There's a missing reference there. So
pretty good, that's beautiful. I don't think anybody will understand it, but it's wonderful.
Some of them are just understandable here.
I need to talk about one thing now. This is one of those situations that I don't know whether it was a dream or it happened. happened in that state between, you know, before you go to sleep or whatever. But anyway, this may sound bizarre at first, but
we're used to that.
I dreamt or saw I was flying. But it wasn't, you know, like the little flying dreams you have when you're a kid or something. I was flying, and people in the group were alternately on my back. And then it was like, they were alternating on my back, and then there were other people, but I couldn't see it very well. I mean, there were other people flying sometimes, but most of the time they didn't fly. But it was like another voice external to me said, the secret of the Holy Spirit is in flying. And it's like, what I saw was that the reason that man, I mean, God could have made man able to do any kind of stuff. I mean, he could have been able to fly or teleport or do any, you know, anything that because the mind is capable of that potentiality. But the reason that man is locked into walking, except by external devices, is because that is in essence the revelation of labor. I mean, you have to move from point A to point B on the ground. You have to expend effort. In flying, all like the eagles, and I was going to ask you to sing a song, but you know, let it wait on the Lord. Mm-hmm. All the eagle does is move his wings to catch
the wind.
And the eagle almost never flaps his wings if you watch him. He just moves. He just changes the pitch of the or the angle of his wings, and it doesn't matter whether the wind is coming against him or sideways or behind him. It doesn't matter. He just moves the pitch of his wings and he soars. But that's why in Isaiah it says, they that wait in the Lord shall renew their faith or their renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
Yeah.
But the essence of it is that I can't put this into words very well, but that the essence of the Holy Spirit is to show you that your plans will fail, and that all you need to do in rest is wait. And I mean, there's nothing revolutionary in it, but when you see it tied to what flying is, and especially the flight of an eagle. I can't explain it to you the right words, but it was it emotionalized totally that experience or that essence of the difference between walking to get to a point and just changing the pitch or angle of the wing.
Well, flapping would be counterproductive to an eagle.
Right.
It's only to
work.
Slow down.
It's the idea.
Stop. You know, feel it.
When you think about why you expend so much labor, I was thinking about the things that I expend real, you know, effort for. It's to get that kind of high.
It's like you're sensitive to the power of the wind or the spirit, and you gear yourself to. What I was doing is resting on that draft of wind, wherever it's coming from, in a particular way.
Leviticus 12.
These are the readings for Tishri 5, Leviticus 12, 1 to 13, 28. We've seen that there are, I mean, up thus far in Leviticus, we've talked about the different, we've talked slightly about the offerings, we'll go into more detail, but we've seen that there's the sin offering, the trespass offering, the burnt offering, and the meat offering. And now we're going to get into some some things about being unclean and then the cleansing of the lepers and all that kind of good stuff. Just read the 12th chapter.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, If a woman have conceived seed and born a man-child, then she shall be unclean 7 days. According to the days of the separation for her infirmity shall she be unclean. And in the 8th day the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. And she shall then continue in the blood of her purifying 33 days. She shall touch no hallowed thing, nor come into the sanctuary, until the days of her purifying be fulfilled. But if she bear a maid child, then she shall be unclean 2 weeks, as in her separation. And she shall continue in the blood of her purifying 66 days.
I don't know the answer to this. My question, and I still can't understand it, is why the time of purification for a woman is twice as long, or much longer than it is for a man. But I've
struggled. For anything?
Huh?
For anything?
No, in the case of this conception.
I mean, the man was impure?
No. If she bore a man-child, then she's unclean for a period of time. But if she bore a female child, she's unclean for much longer.
Because women are just more unclean than men.
Well, right. You know, there's a place in the New Testament that's a funny thing about letting in an unmarried woman or a widow, that there's a time somehow of waiting, that, you know, whether or not they've met the needs of the brethren or something like that. There's not a readiness. They don't come in as easily as men do for some reason. And it seems like we understood this, that some of those things would be also clear.
Well, hopefully. Well, I don't understand it now. Okay, go ahead.
And when the days of her purifying are fulfilled for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring a lamb of the first year for a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering, unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, unto the priest. He shall offer it before the Lord and make an atonement for her, and she shall be cleansed from the issue of her blood. This is the law for her that hath borne a male or a female. And if she be not able to bring a lamb, then she shall bring 2 turtles or 2 young pigeons, the one for the burnt offering and the other for a sin offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for her, and she shall be clean.
Okay, let's go to Luke 2. It's not 2 turtles, it's 2 turtle doves, by the way.
The voice of the turtle will be heard.
Yeah. Luke 2, starting verse 21 through 24. Read it, Pete.
Starting with what verse?
Luke 2, verse 21 through 24.
And when 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel before he was conceived in the womb. And when the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And to offer a sacrifice according to that which is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons.
And the reason that she offered the turtle doves is because they were too poor to offer a lamb. There's a whole sect of Christianity which claims that they were rich. This offering.
Prosperous carpenter.
He's a prosperous carpenter. But anyway, this is the. If she not be able to bring a lamb, it's not because she wasn't able, from the standpoint of one with her, but she wasn't able to afford a lamb. Okay. John, you want to read?
13:1, is that where we are?
Yeah.
And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, saying, when a man shall have in the skin of his flesh a rising, a scab or bright spot, and it be in the skin of his flesh like the plague of leprosy, then he shall be brought unto Aaron the priest, or unto one of his sons the priest. And the priest shall look on the plague in the skin of the flesh, and when the hair in the plague is turned white, and the plague in sight be deeper than the skin of his flesh, it is a plague of leprosy. And the priest shall look on him and pronounce him unclean. If the bright spot be white in the skin of his flesh, and in sight be not deeper than the skin, and the hair thereof be not turned white, then the priest shall shut up him that hath the plague 7 days. And the priest shall look on him the seventh day, and behold, if the plague in his sight be at a stay, and the plague spread not in the skin, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days more. And the priest shall look on him again the seventh day, and behold, if the plague be somewhat dark, and the plague spread not in the skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean, it is but a scab, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scab spread much abroad in the skin, after that he had been seen of the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen of the priest again. And if the priest see that, behold, the scab spreadeth in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean, it is a leprosy. When the plague of leprosy is in a man, then he shall be brought unto the priest. And the priest shall see him, and behold, if the rising be white in the skin, and it have turned the hair white, and there be quick raw flesh in the rising, it is an old leprosy in the skin of his flesh. And the priest shall pronounce him unclean, and shall shut him up, for he is unclean.
Shall not shut him up, for he is unclean.
And if a leprosy break out abroad in the skin, and the leprosy cover all the skin of him that hath the plague from his head even to his foot, wheresoever the priest looketh, then the priest shall consider, and behold, if the leprosy hath covered all his flesh, he shall pronounce him clean that hath the plague. It is all turned white. He is clean.
Okay, now let's talk about this a little bit.
Is this next verse part of this too? When his flesh turns white. I don't understand much about what they're saying about leprosy or what it looks like, or if there's something, different phases of it or what.
Well, we studied this chapter in detail a long time ago. But let me not answer that first. In verse 2, when a man shall have in the skin of his flesh a rising, a scab or a bright spot, we're talking about anything, any, like it's a pimple or
a boil
any blemish. Now the high priest had to have no scars on his body. He couldn't have any freckles. We'll get into that a little bit later in the law, but I mean, if you had a pimple, you're unclean for 7 days.
I'd be unclean all my life.
I mean, I want you to stop and consider the demands of the law. Now, if you're unclean, that means you cannot. You're effectively not part of the nation of Israel. You're not part of the promise.
Now this, it's just another example of how ridiculous it is for you to try to be something after the flesh. Your sights are too low. You know, you try to worry about your being this or that. That's not the way to, I mean, that's nothing. Look on the law and see what you have to be if you're going to try to be something. Now that's why when you see the end and you see the ridiculousness of trying to follow the law of any of, in any dimension, then you can abandon yourself. And then the law is fulfilled by Christ in you. But can you see the massiveness of the contrast? Either all law or all grace. All law or all grace. I mean, who can control whether they have a pimple or not? Jeez. Now the reason that he's clean, if the leprosy is from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, is because in effect the typology is that he sees that he is totally unfit. He's total sin. It's not sin in what he does anymore, it's what he is. When he sees that, then he's declared clean. Yeah. You know, you still run around saying, well, I think I'm a pretty nice person. Well, you're a joke. A nice person compared to what? Well, some of you may be nice compared to me, but that's no big thing.
You're lepers.
But, I mean, stop and see it out of time. See all of the ridiculous little trips you put on yourself and you put on others. They're so fruitless. You're free. You're complete. You're done. Not because of what you are doing or what you can do or what you can't do. It's because of who you contain. None of this other stuff makes a diddly squat. I mean, that's why we're looking at the law now. Well, okay. I'll say. Are you reading? Or are you writing?
Oh, me? That's right, I was reading.
14.
But when raw flesh appeareth in him, he shall be unclean.
Now, do you understand? Okay, that's the question you had. In leprosy, it's a scale. It's like, it's not scab, but it's scale is the only way to say it, that has a whitish appearance.
Is it all distorted?
Huh?
I mean, is leprosy...
Oh, yeah, it's big-time distortive.
Even in this person that's off-white?
Yeah, it's ugly.
If the person is off-white, then they're all...
All ugly.
They're all ugly.
Big-time ugly.
They look like a mummy, except they don't have any wrappings on. They just look that way, because they're all...
But, and so when they have... But if the raw flesh is seen, then they're not all leprous. Okay.
And the priest shall see the raw flesh and pronounce him to be unclean. For the raw flesh is unclean. It is leprosy. For if the raw flesh turn again and be changed into white, he shall come unto the priest. And the priest shall see him, and behold, if the plague be turned into white, then the priest shall pronounce him clean that hath the plague. He is clean. The flesh also in which, even in the skin thereof, was a boil in his heel. In the place of the boil to be a white rising, or a bright spot, white and somewhat reddish, and it be showed to the priest. And if when the priest seeth it, behold, it is in sight lower than the skin, and the hair thereof be turned white, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague of leprosy broken out of the boil. But if the priest look on it, and behold, there be no white hairs therein, and if it be not lower than the skin, but be somewhat dark, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days. If it spread much abroad in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is plague. But if the bright spot stay in his place and spread not, it is a burning boil. the priest will pronounce them clean. Or if there be any flesh in the skin whereof there is a hot burning, and the quick flesh that burneth have a white bright spot, somewhat reddish or white, then the priest shall look upon it, and behold, if the hair in the bright spot be turned white, and it be in sight deeper than the skin, it is a leprosy broken out of the burning. Wherefore the priest shall pronounce him unclean, it is the plague of leprosy. But if the priest look on it, and behold, there be no white hair in the bright spot, and it be no lower than the other skin, but be somewhat dark, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days, and the priest shall look upon him the seventh day. And if it be spread much abroad in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean, it is the plague of leprosy. And if the bright spot stay in his place, and spread not in the skin, but it be somewhat dark, it is the rising of the burning, and the priest shall pronounce him clean, for it is an inflammation of the burning.
Okay. That was all the readings for Tishri 5. Now, for Heshwan, the first week, we read from 1329 through 59.
Start 1329.
That's it for Tishri 5.
If a man or woman have a plague upon the head or the beard, then the priest shall see the plague and behold.
Got a real problem.
Then the priest shall see the plague, and behold, if it be in sight deeper than the skin, and there be in it a yellow thin hair, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a dry skull, even a leprosy upon the head or beard. And if the priest look upon the plague of the skull, and behold, it be not in sight deeper than the skin, and that there is no black hair in it, then the priest shall shut him up that hath the plague of the skull 7 days. And in the seventh day the priest shall look on the plague, and behold, if the skull spread not, and there be no yellow hair, and the skull be not in sight deeper than the skin, he shall be shaven, but the skull shall he not shave. And the priest shall shut him up that hath the skull 7 days more. And in the seventh day the priest shall look on the skull, and behold, if the skull be not spread in the skin, nor be in the sight deeper than the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the skull spread much in the skin after his cleansing, then the priest shall look on him. And behold, if the skull be spread in the skin, the priest shall not seek for the yellow hair, he is unclean. But if the skull be in his sight at his stay, and there is black hair grown up therein, the skull is healed, he is clean, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. If a man also or a woman have in the skin of their flesh bright spots, even white bright spots, then the priest shall look, and behold, if the bright spots in the skin of their flesh be darkish white, it is a freckle spot that groweth in the skin, he is clean. And if the man whose hair is fallen off his head, he is bald, yet he is clean. And if
I could have told you that.
Harry appreciates that.
And
he that hath his hair fallen off from the part of his head toward his face, he is forehead bald, yet he is clean. And if there be in the bald head or bald forehead a white reddish sore, it is a leprosy sprung up on in his bald head or in his bald forehead.
I think it was providential that Harry wasn't here.
Yeah, probably so.
We all be wrong.
Spared.
Then the priest shall look upon it, and behold, if the rising of the sore be white reddish in his bald head, or in his bald forehead, as the leprosy appeareth in the skin of his flesh, he is a leprous man, he is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him utterly unclean. His plague is in his head.
It's a good thing you weren't shut up because you were bald. Lots of people.
Right.
And the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent and his head bare, and he shall put a covering upon his upper lip and shall cry, unclean, unclean.
Have a covering.
And all the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean, he shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall his habitation be. The garment also that the plague of the leprosy is in, whether it be a woolen garment or a linen garment, whether it be in the warp or of woof or of linen or of woolen, whether it in a skin or in anything made of skin, and if the plague be greenish or reddish in the garment, or in the skin, either in the warp or in the woof, or in anything of skin, it is a plague of leprosy, and it shall be showed unto the priest.
Now, does this talk about also the woofer and the tweeter? Or just the warp? What's the warp and the woof? Just the different
two
things,
two different kinds of folds within the garment.
The way, one way goes this way and one way goes that way. Spinning.
And the priest shall look upon the plague and shut it up that hath the plague 7 days. And he shall look upon the plague on the seventh day. If the plague be spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof, or in a skin, or in any work that is made of skin, the plague is a fretting leprosy, it is unclean. He shall therefore burn that garment, whether warp or woof, in woolen or in linen, or in anything of skin, wherein the plague that is, for it is a fretting leprosy, it shall be burned in fire. And if the priest shall look and behold the plague be not spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything of skin, then the priest shall command that they wash the thing wherein the plague is, and he shall shut it up 7 days more. And the priest shall look upon the plague, and after that it is washed, and behold, if the plague hath not changed his color, and the plague be not spread, it is unclean. Thou shalt burn it in the fire, it is fret inward, whether it be bare within or without. And if the priest look and behold the plague be somewhat dark after the washing of it, then he shall rend it out of the garment, or out of the skin, or out of the warp, or out of the woof. And if it appears still in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof, or in anything of skin, it is spreading plague. Thou shalt burn that wherein the plague is with fire. And the garment, either warp or woof, or whatsoever thing of skin it be, which thou shalt wash, if the plague be departed from them, then it shall be washed the second time, and shall be clean. This is the law of the plague of leprosy in a garment of woolen or linen, either in the warp or woof, or anything of skins, to pronounce it clean or pronounce it unclean.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, with the reading, we read part of this the other day as a reading, and I don't know why we read it again. It must normally, it's been my experience in the cycle readings, when there's two of them, the prophets that are near one another, we probably missed a meaning the first time. So,
1 Kings 5.
This is about Naaman's leprosy. Naaman's leprosy.
Yeah. 2 Kings 5.
Yeah, the whole chapter.
Well, we read this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
That's what he just said.
That's what he just said.
And he says,
I thought
happens.
It was just the last, like, you know, not very long ago, but it's been a few weeks.
Not very long.
I mean, no.
Not very long.
Mm-hmm. You want to read, Tom?
Yeah. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man, and his master was a great man with his master, and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians, And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, Would God, my lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy.
Now remember now, just at this point, Samaria isn't an unclean land. I mean, because it's before that Manasseh and defiled and everything. So Samaria is still a good place at this point. I mean, it's still part of Israel.
Yeah, it's kind of the center of Israel, the northern tribe.
Right. Yeah.
Samaria
it's,
was.
Yeah, it's Gil. Is it? No, I can't remember what Gilgal is or not. But anyway, it was the temple. I mean, that the we'll see that. One of the things we do on a Tabernacles weekend is we're going to follow each place and what happened at each place the tabernacle was set up. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. and then and how it, then it finally ended up in the undergirth or underbelly of the temple when they finally built Herod, I mean Solomon's temple. Okay.
And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel." And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes, and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me."
Now, you understand what's happening.
Yeah, the guy got a little confused about the information of who's going to do this healing.
Well, yeah, but it's what would happen to you if... if it's like somebody coming and, you know, and saying, "Cure this guy of cancer."
Mm-hmm.
Or forgive my sins.
Or forgive my sins, or yeah, anything.
That's the idea, that only God can deal with leprosy. Only God can deal with
I guess it would be like if somebody sent somebody, because they heard that I was a believer, and sent somebody to me and said, and sent a child to me and said, "This child has leukemia, healed him." You know, I think I would want to rend my clothes.
Okay.
And it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." But Naaman was wroth, and went away, said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me, and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, and strike his hand over the place, and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Parpher rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, "My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith to thee, 'Go, wash and be clean'?" Then he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again, like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he returned
wait,
to the...
No, wait a minute. Louis? 15.
He returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him, and he said, "Behold now, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant." But he said, "As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules, burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship thee there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. And he said unto him,
hold on, what is he saying?
The house of Rimmon is Rimmon was a god in Syria.
And what did he say he was going to do?
If he has to go and bow down.
If he has to go and do that. I thought he said
with
he wouldn't.
His master.
Well,
he's talking about the king. His master is the king. He's
right.
saying, well, you know, at the end of it, it says, "Pardon, you know, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing."
He's just saying that, look, if I go back to Syria, and the king wants me to go into his house of worship, And if he doesn't, he'll get killed. He's saying, pardon me in it.
And since he's the captain of Syria, or the, you know, the highest dude in the army, he's liable to have to go in there with the king.
Right.
And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, a man of God, said, behold, my master hath spared Naaman the Syrian, in not receiving at his hand that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. So Gehazi followed after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him, and said, is all well? And he said, all is well. My master hath sent me, saying, behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two chests of garments. And Naaman said, be content, take two talents. And he urged him, and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of garments, and laid them upon two of the servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house, and he let the men go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, thy servant went no whither. And he said unto him, went not my heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee, and unto thy seed forever. And he went out from his presence, a leper as white as snow.
Why would Naaman not receive a blessing? What, when he said he wouldn't receive a blessing of the man? Why? I mean, when Elisha wouldn't receive a blessing?
He wouldn't. The blessing was the goods.
He wouldn't receive any money for.
He wouldn't take money for doing God stuff.
So it's like, oh God, this is so wild.
Yeah.
It's like every time, I mean, this Elijah and Elisha were like, they're just running through the same kind of stuff that happened in, you know, Christ. Moses at the giving of the law. This was a new kind of thing, just like it happened in Acts. It's like these things that happen, they're just the same things. It's all talking about, you know, one thing. You know, what I'm talking about is Ananias and Sapphira, you know, doing the same kind of a deal of a self-seeking thing, or Simon the reference it gives here is about like Simon Magus wanting to buy the, but I don't know if that's
by the Holy Spirit.
I don't know if that's in there, but it's like there's a pattern in all this.
Wow. Well, you know, again, in the Didache or Didache.
I've seen that before.
Bonamici.
The Didache was the order that was allegedly written by the 12, and it was supposedly the order of activity. And it's an apocryphal book, but anyway. If anyone asked for money, they were a false prophet, and they should be. They were considered unclean, which is I don't know. There's an incredible repetitive lesson, as John was saying, about using the gifts of God for your own self-seeking. That's probably the...
Yeah, I don't feel like you're just talking about money. I mean,
it's grasping in the presence of these tremendous,
right? It's like,
you know, outpouring of God's power. You know, it's like money. You're wanting money when you're seeing life flowing out. You know, somebody just been healed of leprosy, and you're thinking about getting some cash out of the deal.
You're considering it.
It's just so mind-blowingly opposite of.
You're considering it lightly, is what you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're.
You're not even seeing it.
Yeah.
You're just.
Yeah.
You're going.
Well, I saw that, you know, it'd be one thing if Elisha had asked for it, but the fact that he refused to be given it, okay, seemed different to me, because he wasn't asking for it, but he refused to be given this thing. And I just, you know, something in me said that maybe this is, you know, the difference is that there's nothing you can do to earn it or pay for it, for anything you receive from God.
That's good.
You know, it's one thing if I could walk up to you and you healed me of leprosy, and then I turn around and I saw my Mustang and give the money to, you know, to somebody, and then I, you know, in some way I can go away and think that I've at least partially repaid God for doing that for me. But if I can't even give you my car, you know, then there's no way I can repay God for what he's done.
What's neat though to me is that these, you know, it says something about people because the same kind of things happen, but it also says something about the kinds of things that are recorded here. It's like everybody reading this would think about the thing in Exodus, you know, that the same power that was working through Moses, you know, many generations ago is right here in Elisha because of the remembrance of it.
Right.
And the same kind of thing is working in Acts because they all knew about both of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And here's somebody else who's fallen down dead because of their, you know, grasping. Or, you know, it's just wild.
It's knowing the terror of God.
Now, I have a question. 17, Naaman says, "Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given unto thy servant 2 mules burden of earth?"
That's just a parcel of land. That's how.
It's plutonium-rich bags of dirt that he wanted to give.
No,
dirt miners.
It's a 2 mules portion of earth was the amount of land that 2 mules could plow in one day.
He wants a plot of land in Israel?
Right.
Okay. I thought he was going to build an altar. I couldn't figure out what he was going to do with 2 mules load of earth.
Yeah.
One of the,
I didn't get myself any.
One of the things we will see in the offerings is the difference between the burnt offering and the meat offering. The burnt offering, nothing was burned outside the camp. I mean, everything was burned on the altar. Even the fat was burned on the altar, and it's like, and it required a life. And anytime it requires any offering that requires a life, it's the indicator that it's for God. I mean, it's because of the life and all that. But it's different than the sin and the trespass offerings we talked about, because the burnt offering was totally consumed, and it was totally acceptable. It was an offering of acceptance unto God, and it was a sweet savor. Now, there's two offerings that are sweet savors. One is the burnt offering, and the other is the meat offering. And the meat offering is made. It's not meat as meat, but it's meat as flour. It's made from flour, oil, and frankincense. And in type, the meat offering then is consumed by the priests. And it's like in type, once the sin and the trespass offerings are taken care of, which are a whole other story, but the sin offering, I mean the burnt offering is for God, the meat offering is for the people, and it's like the completion of the two tables on the Ten Commandments. The one table of the Ten Commandments was for God, and the other table of the Ten Commandments was for the people.
Mm-hmm.
But the meat offering is it meets the requirements that between man and man.
When you said that, I thought, for some reason, I thought about Cain.
That's right. It's a perfect type. Cain tried to offer the meat offering without the blood, and it was unacceptable. There's all kinds of other types we'll get into when we get in that. But anyway, what I want to say about is the meat offering is made from bruised corn, and it typifies that literally that he was bruised for our iniquities, and he was in our consuming of this. The consuming of the bread is more in the type of the meat offering, in that it typifies laying down our lives one for another through his sacrifice, and the burnt offering is more typified in the wine for another reason, or the sin offering. But so anyway, what everything in the scriptures, it doesn't matter what you individually have done or in your relationship individually to God. That's not the meat of it. The essence of it is that you lay down your life one for another, and somehow that's tied into this communion or eating the bread. It's not, you know, it satisfies the demands that we've talked about. By his stripes you are healed, and all of the requirements that we've studied so often. But it also has to do with you laying down your life for each other. And we'll get into that more and more. But anyway, can everybody do the dealing? Okay. On that same night in which he was betrayed, he took the bread, which was already broken.
No, people.
He broke it, but he did it earlier. Come on, you're getting the floor all messed up again. He took the bread and he blessed it, saying, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth." He said, "Take, eat. This is my body." We need new matzah.
Mm-hmm. First day.
And he took the cup and gave thanks, saying, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who createst the fruit of the vine." He said, "Take, drink ye all of it, for this is my blood which is shed for you for the remission of sin." What kind of life?